Well, joining us once more for his regular chat, and that's Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, Darren. Everything all right?
Yep, very, very good indeed. Summer has sprung. Well, sort of. It's a bit cloudy today. How's yourself?
Yes, a bit settling down here, and things are looking good. The place we look like a building site is getting ready for the Grand Prix, which is the end of next month, which, of course, you'll be talking about more in some detail later.
Yeah, a couple of pairs of tickets for the Monaco Grand Prix on offer. Very popular competition. We'll give the details on that very shortly. Lots to run through. Let's start with Leeds United against Norwich. Another defeat.
Seem to be from going to a ride on a high, we're now sort of stagnating and drifting sideways.
It's certainly disappointing.
The only good news, of course, is that the kids is that. Neil will continue to pay the kids and giving them valuable experience.
Certainly disappointing from a fan's point of view how the season's finishing up. And also, when you see a former Leeds United captain scoring against you for Norwich with Johnny Howson scoring. I'm just wondering as well if we could run through exactly what happened with the sale of Johnny Howson, because I think when you talk to most Leeds fans, of all the players that left the club, that seems to be the one that hurt the most.
Yes, it is also the most disappointing. He was, of course, club captain, a very young, probably one of the youngest since Wilkins at Chelsea. I think he captained the club when he was 17 or 18. So this is quite a record for Leeds and for young Howson, who came through the ranks. Was an exceptional player. The problem is that he was in the last year of his contract and he simply wouldn't extend it, would not even discuss a new contract. He was always evasive, or if he just didn't say anything, just listened, looked at you. And I suspect this was his agent behind it. The problem we had is that if a player leaves you when he's under his 24th birthday, then you get compensation. The club that takes your player has to agree to pay you compensation in lieu of a transfer fee. And if you fail to agree, then it goes to an independent tribunal. And then it's at arm's length. Now, the problem, we looked at John's birth certificate. He's 24 on, I think, the 29th of June. And his contract ran out on the 30th of June, because that's when all contracts run out. And so it meant if you're 24 and over, then you get a free, you just walk away. And we lose all kind of, we lose any compensation at all. And this was dragging on almost inevitably because we got to Christmas. And we were playing Millwall at home. And the ball we were attacking, remember it clearly, and the ball was out on the right-hand side as we're looking from the old ballroom. And a Millwall defender was just outside the penalty area, retrieving the ball to play it forward, and Johnny came rushing forward to close him down, and the guy sort of side-slipped him and Johnny slipped and went down. Wasn't a foul, nobody was near him. That's one of those terrible things when he ripped one of his joints. I can't remember now whether it was his knee or his ankle, but he went down like a bag of bricks and stayed down. We had to take him off. And, of course, the transfer window ended on the 31st of January. And out of the blue, Norwich came along and offered us £1.8 million for him while he was still injured. Well, we discussed it and really had no alternative. If we said no, he wasn't playing. We were paying his wages. He wasn't playing for us because he was injured. We didn't know how long it was going to be, because they estimated 6 weeks to 2 months. So we pay his wages and get him better at the end of June, then he walk out. We get nothing. So we bow to the inevitable and took the 1.8 million. Put it in the pot. It was a great tragedy, but I was sort of disappointed with Johnny because I've been very supportive of him, and he came through the Leeds United Academy, and even though he was club chair captain, he didn't show that sufficient loyalty to the club. So I was always disappointed of him, but that hasn't stopped me keeping an eye on his career and cheering him on. Today he's a good player. But that is the full and true story. We wanted to build our promotion team around him. And Norwich, I mean, did away. I don't know whether they're the same agent, which have come and now the same agent involved or not. Of course, Bradley Johnson was different. He wanted to be paid the same wages as Johnny Howson. And we weren't prepared to do it because we didn't think he was as good a player, Johnny Howson. So he went. And Becchio, well, his agent, I'm not really a vindictive type of person, but I'm not unhappy at Becchio's subsequent career because he walked out with his agent, wouldn't sign a new contract. I got a lot of stick for that, but it wasn't our fault. Players have the right to move on now. He went to Norwich, and from being our leading goal scorer, Norwich, all he could do was, I think he only started one game. The rest of the time he was there as a sub. So 3 months after he went, he was sending messages back saying he wanted to come back. Well, we're having going to have to buy him back from Norwich because they wouldn't let him go for nothing. And his career now has been, he's gone from bad to nothing. I think he's now at Preston. And I think he scored a goal recently, but not much to talk about. Snodgrass, he was quite frank about it. He simply said, I want to go now because I've got a chance going to the Premiership and earning big money. And we said, well, you know, we'll match the money, we'll pay it. And he said, no, I feel I want to play Premiership football. But secondly, I've got to think of my family first. He said, I could get injured, maybe break a leg between now and the end of the season, in which case nobody would want me. Whereas if I sign for Norwich and get a couple of million a year or whatever they were paying those days, and I break a leg, well, I'm still going to get my 2 million a year. I'm a family. So with that logic, we just took the money and let him go. They knocked the guts out of our team. But these things happen in football. You have to pick yourself up, dust yourself down, start all over again.
Exactly true. Some interesting things happening at Leeds United. Well, every single week's interesting at Leeds United. And Massimo Cellino, especially, that looks like a couple of court appearances coming up for the Leeds owner. One to do with allegations of he evaded tax owed by an imported Range Rover, and then also some problems with Macron.
First of all, about the Range Rover, his personal problems, I don't really understand them because it depends where the Range Rover came from. If it came from in Europe, as far as I understand it, you pay VAT or TVA, as it's called on the continent, same thing, when you buy the vehicle. I don't know of any situation where you can get a car tax-free of that unless you're exporting it. And that, again, I don't think applies within the common market. No. So you'd have thought that the car would have been taxed at the point of entry. Unless, of course, he came probably across them on the boats that was he also having discussions about. He seemed to have been badly advised. Anyway, and for the trouble, the other trouble, of course, in Italy, it takes everything so long to get to court. And you can delay, I gather, the last attendance. He didn't turn up, so they just postponed the hearing. But it's unsettling for Leeds because the Premiership, the Football League, and the FA will be sitting there waiting to see what happens about these allegations before deciding his future role at Leeds, which again is putting the club into a difficult situation because it's in a sort of limbo. I suspect that if he's found guilty, then he will continue to own the club through his sons and wife and daughter, or a family trust. And if he's banned from being a director, then he'll probably be an advisor with a front man acting for him on the board. But nevertheless, this uncertainty is unfortunate because he has a forceful personality and it's missing at the moment around Denham Road. And it also affects people who they might want to bring into the club, either on the management side or on the playing side, because the first thing you look at is, well, what's the setup? Like the old saying, do right, do wrong, but for God's sake, do summit. And really, this has been drifting on for nearly a year now, one by the other. I've been looking at the accounts this week, the Leeds accounts this week. They also raise more questions than answers. I mean, for example, when I say Salina, I mean his interest, if you like. Leeds United Football Club had an issue capital of £500,000. 500,000 shares, £1 shares, the minimum required by Football League in the Championship. And those shares were held by Leeds City Holdings. And Leeds City Holdings was the company that I sold to GFH when they took over the club. So when they sold their shares to Cerino, they kept one way or the other, in one guise or the other. They kept switching around to doctor their balance sheet. Because they were struggling profit-wise and asset-wise at the time. They kept 25% between them and Selruddin, who was the chairman at one time, in Leeds United. But last year, Cerino's interests subscribed for 4 million new shares in Leeds United Football Club at £2 a share. So Leeds United now have 4.5 million shares in issue, which Cellino holds 4 million. The other 500,000 are held by Leeds City Holdings. That's only 500,000 out of 4.5 million. So there's not a 25% anymore. It's 25% in the holding company, the former holding company, which now only has 11% of the club. 500,000 shares out of 4.5 million. So GFH owned 25% of 11%, which is 2.75%. Which doesn't make sense. So when in the notes it says they're going to make a further announcement, we should confirm that GFH have 25% of the club, again, it doesn't understand, doesn't make sense. So Leeds fans at LP wonder, be interesting somebody tell us how that's getting on, how successful it is. Will be probably under some difficulties, you know, who the hell to deal with and how much they're dealing with. The real problem is that the stumbling block is GFH, because I think they've overpriced and overvalued their stake in Leeds. prop up their own balance sheet. And they can't do anything, because if they do sell whatever they own, it will crystallise the value, which will be nothing like. I'm sure they've got the figure they've got in their own balance sheet. So it's like a domino effect. While they've got the shares in these, they can value anything they like, providing get them past the auditors. But if they get rid of them, then they have to face up to their loss, and maybe they can't do that. Meanwhile, we're still trying to run a football club. The other thing I can't understand is on the notes, it says that the staff figures were reduced from 128 to 107. That's 21 out of 128, which is a 16% reduction. Yet how has the overhead cost gone up by £2 million? Doesn't make sense. If you take Sean Harvey, exceptional payment, out of director's fees, why is there still £500,000? Who's got that money? And we know the GFA to a... We're talking the historical figures, obviously. But we know, I mean, for 2014, I mean, Cellino took over in February, I think, and carried on working in tender for some time earlier. So all the damage had been done by them by GFH. And we know, for God knows, they had consultancies galore, investigators galore, legal fees galore, etc. Some of it unnecessary, because they wouldn't face up to some of the court cases that were outstanding, of which some are still outstanding. So to date, we've been winning most of them. It's puzzling. You've now got a football club, the net deficit of £13 million in assets. And I'm sure they've cut the loss since then and continue to cut it. But at the same time, of course, all the income's falling away. The gate receipts were down 2014 over 2013. Commercial operations were down. They've got the dispute with Macron. It's concerning. And I think that in Mr. Cellino's chairman's statement, he states that he wants to rebuild the bridges and relationships with the fans and the city. Well, perhaps... the board take a first step by telling people what's going on.
I think the fans certainly would enjoy that. Moving on, KB, to David Haig, still in prison in Dubai. The case against Patel and Al-Rais has been adjourned. We're still waiting for a new date to be confirmed on that.
Yes, we've tried to get more information on this, but the Westminster Magistrates Court were not forthcoming, and David Haig has been quiet this month also. So basically, what's this space? When we find it out, we'll let you know as soon as possible. Let the listeners, soon as possible, be on the internet as well. But the fact that it's been delayed, adjourned, I'm not really surprised, because that's how GFH's attitude to all the court cases of difference of opinion. Fight and delay it, pretend it never happened, let it go away, and hopefully it'll be dropped in the end. But I think this one is going to continue. And don't forget the date today, 16th of April, Thursday. And on Saturday, it will be exactly 11 months of the day when David Haig was lured to Dubai under false pretences and was arrested 1 hour after he returned to the office. That's 11 months to the day he'd been incarcerated in the Dubai jail with no criminal charges, hasn't even been interviewed about any possible offences he may have committed. It's just disgraceful. What's even more disgraceful is the government done nothing about it. Apparently it doesn't exist. He's being supported by charities, Prisoners Abroad, and by this fantastic QC who's acting pro bono, trying to help him. And GFH are happy to let him rot so they can keep all their wrongdoing and shortcomings under the carpet while they're buying time to try and sort out the mess, irrespective of the human cost.
Well, moving on, KB, to more positive news. Positive in the respect that there's something to win, but sad that it's the last VIP ticket competition for this season for Leeds United. I was in the box myself on Tuesday, hosting a box, and if anybody hasn't done it, it's spectacularly good.
Yes, well, I'm glad you endorsed that. Yes, come on, folks, last chance. See Leeds hopefully go out on a high. Three course meal, including drinks. Watch the big screen, see the atmosphere build up, and around the country, with the whole championship and indeed the premiership reaching their final stages. And great comfort, a great situation, great view. Now, Darren, I'll leave you to give the details.
Thanks, KB. Yeah, who scored? You need to answer this question, OK, to be in with a chance to win those VIP tickets. For the last game of the season, who scored their first goal for Leeds United during the home debut against Cardiff City? Who scored their first goal for Leeds United during their home debut against Cardiff? Was it A, Calvin Phillips? Was it B, Lewis Cook? Or was it C, Charlie Taylor? For your chance to win, text Yorks followed by A, B or C to 84383. Now your text costs £1 plus your standard message rate, and your full terms and conditions are on radioyorkshire.co.uk. And we have one more competition outstanding to talk about, KB, which is the Monaco Grand Prix.
Yep, well, sitting out here, or going around the town, perhaps I should say the principality, it's been looked more and more like a building site. The grandstands are going up, being erected as we speak. Crash barriers are going up. The chain link fencing to protect the spectators. It's all going on. And in the middle of it, of course, we've got the Rolex Masters tennis competition this week. So that it's more like Leeds on a Leeds City Centre on a shopping afternoon, it is a principality. But there's so much going on. But it'll all be ready in time. All the light food will be in on time. The catering facilities are being erected. There's a buzz about the place. And, of course, the great thing is that the seats we've got at the back of, last row or so of the main grandstand, which is where the finishing line is. And because you're at the back of the stand, you can also sort of turn around and look over and see the start as well. So it's unique. And two tickets, unlucky guy and his mate, or wife, or partner, for the run-up practice on the Saturday and the grand final on the Sunday. It's a superb event, a superb fun, and it's a culmination, the climax of a great week. And you can do all that. And here's how you do it. Over to you, Darren.
Thanks, KB. Yes, you just need to answer this simple question. Who is the reigning Formula One world champion? Is it A, Jenson Button? Is it B, Lewis Hamilton? Or is it C, Sebastian Vettel? You need to text DAB to 84383, followed by A, B or C. And text costs £1 plus your standard message rate. Full terms and conditions, as ever, on radioyorkshire.co.uk. KB, once again, an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us.
Right, and Richard, just a reminder to the people listening about that, of course, is that what you can do, if you do win, you can either just come out and watch the race and go home, or you can turn it into part of an extended holiday, popping over into Italy, into the border into Italy, to Ventimiglia, where their world-famous market takes place every Friday, where the price is a half hour in Monte Carlo. You've got Cannes, lovely, where the film festival is held. Got Saint-Tropez, which Billy Bardo made popular years ago. Good fun. So, here's whether you're just coming for the weekend, coming for the week, or making it part of a tour, it's a great chance to have an exceptional holiday. And by the way, because it's part of France, where they have the, or part of the France ambiance, where they have the touristic venues, okay, you can spend £500 on a meal if you want to. You want to have a nice meal for two people for 30 quid, including a glass of wine. So, all chances, all tastes,